sounds you make, you can hear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's okay. Don't worry. As long as you, like, don't, like, move the mic, really, the sounds are fine. See, I look a lot taller.
Yeah.
When I'm I think I have a long torso.
Yeah, I have the opposite. I have a short torso.
Interesting.
And long arms and legs.
Long legs. Long legs is nice, though.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like long legs. So welcome to the Comedy Confession Booth, Kate. You are here because you're headlining our, well, you're doing your solo show here.
Yeah.
And then you're also headlining our spotlight show.
Yes.
And that'll be really fun.
Yeah.
So, welcome. Have you been to Barcelona before?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We're still in the mode from like filming the video.
Yeah.
Where we're like, yeah, we just filmed the promo video for the spotlight and it was very like, Vem directed me to try and pull things out of Kate and be like, Kate, don't say shit. But then we just had a conversation.
Yeah.
So.
It was good.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good for sure. So yeah, well, welcome back to Barcelona.
Thank you.
What brings you, just doing your show or were you like vacation?
Just doing my show. I saw, it's so weird. Like I had, I don't know how interesting this is, like admin, but like someone invited me to do a gig in the south of Germany. And then someone, a comedian I knew from Berlin, opened up a comedy club in Lisbon, invited me to do that.
Fun.
So then I was like, okay, like I had these two dates and they were 2 weeks apart.
Cool.
And then I was like, okay, I'm going to build myself a little like Europe work in progress tour. And so then I was like, let's see the cheapest flight. The easiest way to get to the south of Germany was to fly into Paris. So I had 3 days in Paris and we did a show there, which was like amazing.
Really?
Had like cabaret. So these performers I met at this art residency who do like cabaret, and one of them has just started doing stand up and she's so good, Gabby. Gabby Luna, if you want to find her.
Gabby Luna.
And so she hosted, and then they did like these amazing performances in the second half of like cabaret. And then when someone did a praying mantis striptease.
Oh my God.
And now I want all my comedy shows to have a praying mantis striptease at the end. It was so good.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was a really fun show and it came together in Paris really easily. So I did that. Then I went to the gig in South Germany. Then I crossed over to Luxembourg because I found a very cheap flight from Luxembourg to Lisbon. Did a gig in Lisbon, Luxembourg, and then did Lisbon. And then went from Lisbon to Porto and I sort of hung out there for a bit. And then flew from Porto to Barcelona last night.
Nice.
Was like, let's message Hannah cool. Becker and see if I can do a show in Barcelona.
And you're doing it.
And now I'm doing it.
Oh my God, you're here living the dream. And where else are you going on the tour?
Then I fly back to the UK on Sunday, but I do Cambridge Fringe.
Okay.
And then I have a really intense week of gigs, actually, when I land, like London and also Manchester.
Yeah. The Mancusians.
Yeah.
I know geography.
Is that what they call them? Mancunians.
Is it Mancunians?
Mancunians, yeah.
I was so proud of myself. I was like, I know what they're called.
I was like, yes, maybe. No, Mancunians, I
Mancunian.
Think. Mancunian. Yeah. So they're, going to go and do a gig for them. And then, it's just work in progress is really until Edinburgh. Which,
and then you're doing Edinburgh.
Which I am, fingers crossed, doing at the moment. It looks a bit shaky.
Why?
Because venue might not be happening. Yeah.
How is that? Like, who was it with?
Kind of complicated, but like a friend had got me a venue with his production company, and then I felt like we weren't necessarily the right fit for each other, and also like I don't think I was going to make them any money. Like I'm not really out here trying to do the Edinburgh hustle, which is like one way of doing Edinburgh, which is like jump on all the shows, make as much money as you can, blah blah blah.
Right.
I'm just really excited about this show that I'm doing because it's the first time I'm doing an hour.
Cool.
And I really like feel like it's coming together in a way that like. I don't know. With comedy, it's a funny one because I started like 5 years ago in Berlin.
Okay.
And I think in the beginning, you're always just trying to get laughs wherever you can get them sort of thing. And then like for me, I never really wrote comedy. I never sat down and wrote. I just would go on stage and be like, this happened recently and it was funny. Let's try it. Mm-hmm. And I almost like didn't want to touch that method because that method seemed to work really well of just being like, I'm just going to see how it feels and then do it. And
that's
then
amazing.
Which has really been working very well for 5 years. And like I just live a sort of a bit of a weird spontaneous life and then get comedy from it. But this is the first time I've ever sort of sat down and been like, what is it I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
What is the message I'm trying to convey? And how do I want to showcase how I feel about the world? And that's really, really been an interesting process. And I like didn't know if I could do it. Like I was like, I just don't think I could write like in that way. But it turns out you like, yeah, okay, you can. And
for sure.
So that's been really nice. And it's just like building into something that I'm really excited about and like kind of proud of, because it feels like it's very me and my message. Like I spent yesterday in Porto, like, feeling a bit anxious, but I just sort of wandered around the city, but like stopping at like parks and mm-hmm. in squares and stuff, and then would like write more notes and like listen to more recordings of like the show and like write notes about like what should stay and what should go. And it just feels, yeah, really nice. So yeah, that's kind of what I want to bring to Edinburgh, which is like this, which is, you know, the Edinburgh debut, it would be, because it'd be my first hour, which mm-hmm. is like, this is the this is me and this is the show and this is what I want to say. And I think that feels, that would feel very nice.
Yeah. 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 To kind of pull it all together and say, like, I'm not just coming up here and telling silly stories. Like, yeah. I have something to say.
I have something to say. And, like, yeah. this is, yeah. And this is the culmination.
Can you give us, like, a tease of, like, what that something is? Like, what's, like, kind of, like,
sure.
overarching theme?
So the show's called A Messiah Comes, which is, like,
love it.
Comes and comes, and
as long as there's sex, I'm in.
Yeah, the sex jokes, because I do love sex jokes and I have a few of them. But it's also I have like a kind of deep-seated feeling, like I think like a lot of people have this, and I think especially like Black women and mm-hmm. Black femmes, this feeling like you've got to like save the world, and mm-hmm. Or like you're in service to something. And I have this feeling, and I've always had it, and I've more and more started to like unpack where that came from. Oh my God, what a surprise. It's from my mother. As all the best gifts are. So it's like me trying to unpack that, and like, what am I trying to save the world, or is it validation? And I think it just is also interesting, like a lot of male comedians and like just men in general mm-hmm. often like position themselves as some kind of messiah or some kind of savior. Yeah.
They do, but they never are.
No, they're just like often like the worst person you've ever.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it's the whole to, like the. Yeah, like the knight in shining armor thing, right? Yeah. And the damsel in distress. And it's like, actually, it's kind of the other way around.
Yeah. And like the amount of emotional labor that women do, oh, or like, God. Yeah, or queer people, or like, yeah. Or marginalized people of marginalized genders. Like, I think this is the thing I'm trying to like unpack with the show, which is like how much of it is like, yeah, I do have a deep. Seated feeling that I would like the world to be like, I believe that it could be different, and I don't mm-hmm. think it's like that radical a belief that it could be different and it could be better, but like also unpacking like, where does this desire to save the world come from? Like, is it to do with like also wanting validation for myself? Because I
like,
think
I'll feel like a good person if I feel,
yeah, and I think we all yeah. want to believe we're good people, and that's, yeah, so that's the, I mean, it sounds incredibly high concept right now as I just explained it. I was like, or is it just like a lot of sex jokes? There are also a lot of sex jokes. It's also, but I think it's, yeah, it's trying to be on that theme, yeah. And it's just trying to nail that thing. But it's, yeah, it's just, oh, it's, I'm like, when I say like I'm in loving working on it, like I'm like adoring it, which is interesting.
That's amazing.
I have quite a like a love-hate relationship with comedy. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear that this is because of industry reasons rather than comedy itself. I
right,
love doing
like the
comedy.
Art of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love doing comedy. I love making people laugh. I love just, I think it's such a nice, a magical experience, like to be in a room and all feeling the same thing at the same time. And I think in that sense, yeah. it's also quite reverent, like,
I agree.
Yeah. So, but it's, yeah, I'm absolutely like just adoring trying to figure out this show.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
I think that's like the way forward. Cause I think probably, I'm guessing what you mean industry wise is like lately, and I've talked about this a lot, is the focus on social media yeah. and like followers and all of that, and how that has kind of like lifted some people up and also knocked others down.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating because it kind of takes away from like the art of doing it.
Yeah. And stand up is such a different, I mean, like it's a social media stuff, and then it's also like in the UK, I think just like the industry stuff.
True,
like,
true, true.
All these institutions and organizations that are like a barrier to you getting further. But yeah, like this thing with the social media is like, for sure, like it's a really different art form. Like there was a moment, especially during the pandemic, where I was like, I guess I got to start making TikToks.
Right.
But actually, I don't want to. Like the thing at the end is that I actually don't want to. And it's not like I don't enjoy like social media content like I do. Like everyone else, I'm addicted to my phone. But I don't want to talk to a phone. And actually, mm-hmm. I really, really realized my energy is completely... I'm like an extrovert in the true sense of the word, where I get my energy from other people.
Sure.
And when I'm not with other people, I don't have that energy. So I'm not very good at being by myself with a phone. I can't muster the energy. Mm-hmm. And I know this because I did a YouTube channel during the pandemic, during lockdown. And my friend Sarah, who was like my housemate, she watched it and she was like, yeah, your YouTube... She was like, for someone who's like very funny on stage and in real life, your YouTube was surprisingly depressing. And I think it was just like me, like, yeah, like having a breakdown. It wasn't me, like, I couldn't sustain that stamina. Like, I feed off other people.
Exactly.
Really,
and comedy, for me, like, the amazing part of it is that it's a live art form. Like, it's kind of like the difference between being, like, when you study acting, for instance, like, because I studied theater, being on stage and doing like musicals and plays versus like being in movies.
Sure.
And it's like, I feel like comedy is going in that direction too, where you have like the people that are club comics and live comics.
Yeah.
And then some people just randomly blow up, but others are like feeding into the social media.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, and it's not like to be done on social media, because there's amazing social media comedians
who
like can do really both, and it's great.
Yeah,
but like I don't want to do that, but somehow like the industry, the way the industry is going, means like maybe I have to at some point, or I have to figure that out,
or like it helps you. Like what I've noticed is like, if you have more followers, you get more spots. And so then you're able to just do the live shows the way you want to.
Yeah. And then you're like less beholden to like everyone having to see you in person.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, I do think the thing about comedy is like, it is this live feeling, and it's like for this one night, no two gigs are ever the same.
Never.
And every audience is different. And you just like, and doing an hour has like work in progress is like, these have really made me see that like, everyone is like different depending on who we have in the audience. And we like one show in Brighton, we went down this whole road where it was just this guy in the front row who was like maybe gonna date my mom.
Oh my god.
And his daughter was there, and it was like so funny, so we just like stuck on that. There was another show where someone had like shouted out that you can come back to ours for a threesome at the back, and we'd like had a whole thing about that. There was a
did you do it?
No, I was like, oh, you're going to pay for the Uber? And they were like, classic Brighton. Which is like, no, you're going to have to get on the bus. And I was like, I'm not getting a bus.
You
used
to get on the bus?
I'm not getting on a bus for a threesome.
No,
like, no.
Who does that?
Absolutely not.
That's like, I don't know. It feels weird. Like, if you're going to have a threesome, like, go all out.
Go
like,
all out. Come on. I deserve at least one Uber ride.
Yeah, get the Uber. Like, buy the bottle of whiskey or whatever. Yeah. Like, have a grand old time. Don't what are you gonna like talk on the bus? Like,
I don't know.
Like, can you imagine that bus ride being just like so?
What
are
establishing
your
our preferences?
Stuff. Like, what's the boundaries? how's your relationship? And then who's the star of the threesome? Yeah. Like, and then there's like an old lady being like, shh, keep it down,
quiet on the bus.
Although in Brighton, like, they're probably really sex positive on the bus.
Brighton's a funny city. It's very like kind of alternative, but it's also like kind of also just full of old people as well.
That's
true. Like to be near the sea.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it's kind of like the like retirement.
Yeah, it's also got that vibe.
Yeah. That is weird. It's like a Boca Raton meets like it's to me it reminded me of like I don't know if you know like Provincetown in Massachusetts.
I've heard of Province. Yeah. No, wait, I'm thinking of somewhere else.
Maybe.
Providence is what I'm thinking.
Oh, Providence, Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
Which is wild because that's like really tiny. I mean, it's the capital, but it's like Rhode Island's small.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason I know it is because I this is really weird. I think John Mulaney mentioned it in a stand-up.
Oh, he could have.
And then a guy I'd met on a gig, like a job I was doing that wasn't like a comedy job, who I thought was really hot and interesting. We were sharing the bus together, and he told me he'd gone to university in Providence.
Oh, okay.
And then I like messaged
Brown
him
is in Providence.
Maybe he went to Brown.
Maybe he was really smart.
Or maybe he was really smart. We had a really good bus ride. It was one of those ones where he suddenly was like, he like just was like, we were chatting, and then he's like, okay, I need to get off because I actually missed my stop 4 stops ago. And I was like, oh, like, why didn't you say something? And he was like, this conversation was really interesting, so I didn't want to get off.
That's
and
so
I was
nice.
Like, oh. And then I like had a big crush on him, and then I messaged him, but he was like, I'm dating someone else, and I don't like to date more than one person at the same time.
What a weirdo.
I think that's fine.
No, I think it's fine, but I think it's weird that he like continued the conversation. I don't know.
No, because we were just having like a chat. You know, okay, like okay, we were having okay. kind of an intellectual conversation about that's fair. The world or something. So it wasn't like, you know, sometimes you're just having a good conversation with someone.
That's fair. I get more frustrated when guys will like flirt with you all night. And then at the yeah. end, they're like, by the way, I'm dating someone.
No, he didn't do that. And I wouldn't oh, okay, say flirt with me at all. But I messaged him and he was like, I said, I don't know how to say this, but I basically thought you were like hot and interesting.
Mm.
And he was like, oh, I thought the same, but no, I'm dating somewhere else. And I was like, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess it's good that you appreciate it and that he was upfront about it.
Yeah.
In the message.
Yeah.
Because he could have just been like, you're hot and interesting too, let's meet up. And then and be then like, bam. By the way, I'm dating someone.
Yeah.
And at that point, you would have been like, why are you wasting my time?
Right. Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you would have been like, this is fun, whatever.
I don't know.
Yeah. How is it? Do you have a, like, what's your love life right now? Comedy confession booth. Let's go.
What's my love life?
I feel
life?
Like I know you well enough after our cave conversation.
After our video situation. it's non-existent.
Nice, same. Don't worry.
It's comedy.
Yeah.
And it's comedy and I move around a lot. I made the decision at the beginning of this year, the resolution to not move back to London.
Oh.
I don't love living in London. It's really expensive. It's not the kind of vibe I want to live under, but it's also where my career is.
So where are you living?
So I'm essentially nomadic. That's what Ooh. I've been doing, which is exhausting, but has saved me a ton of money this year. It's also because I'm running out of money. I don't want it all to go to like London rent to live in like a flat share with like insane people, which is what yeah. happened to me last year.
Oh God.
Yeah, my housemate was crazy.
Really? Why?
Yeah, and
what
I don't
happened?
Like to, oh, she like joined a cult and yeah, she joined a cult. She was just, my intuition was like alarm bells before I moved in and I still did it anyway because she was a friend of a friend and as a friend is really like a good person. So I was like,
yeah.
And then I was like, oh no, you're like the kind of special psychic, like psycho person that like, yeah, she was one of those people that's like quite like esoteric, which I love that stuff. So like not mad about it, but yeah. like who thinks they're so enlightened that like everyone else is beneath them. Yeah, she was just insane on multiple levels. But,
oh, my God. There's a girl like that I follow. I'm not going to say more details about her. Who people who know her will know who I'm talking about. And
bitching about people in the podcast. Yeah.
Oops. And yeah, she thinks she's the like second coming.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they kind of that's also a little bit about the show is like those people that think they're the people, like the good yeah. people are like always the worst humans you've ever met.
Yeah. Like the Jesus complex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the Messiah complex. Yeah. Which is what I wanted to call the show, but another bad comedian got there. First 10
Messiah years comes honestly better.
Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Great.
Yeah, yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah, so I left that house and then January I was in Tanzania seeing my family, seeing my dad, and then
nice. Is that where your whole family's from?
That's where my dad's from. My mom's okay. from the UK.
Nice. Cool.
So I was there and then February, March I was in New Orleans. April I took 10 days for Berlin and then I was back in London for like 2 weeks and then a bunch of shows and then now I'm on my weird Europe tour.
Nice.
And then I'm go back for 2 months. And basically I'm doing a mixture of like staying with family, friends, who very kindly let me stay in their spare room. And that's also probably the reason I'm never going to get laid again because I now live with 270-somethings.
They won't know. They probably can't hear anyway.
They probably can't. Like, yeah, definitely one of them needs hearing aids. So it's fine. But I don't know if I want to bring home a boy
yeah.
to...
Well, you sneak them in like it's like high school.
Yeah. So that's why the love life's a bit non-existent because I'm constantly on the move.
I get it.
But I did sleep with a chiropractor.
Ooh.
The other month.
That's useful.
Yes, because
did he align you?
This is having one night stands in your 30s. It's like you cracked my back, and I was like, "You crack my back, I'll break yours." Like, don't you worry. And he let me have a go on his reformer Pilates.
Oh my God. That's the dream, honestly. Yeah, I would like, love to sleep with a chiropractor.
I was like, yeah, it was great. I was like, my back felt so much better.
Oh my God.
So, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, so I was in the city. I visited the States for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And while I was there, I have my lesbian doctor friends. They're the most useful friends I've ever had, but like also amazing people. Like they're beautiful, amazing people that I love. And I went to middle school with one of them. And then her wife is now also my friend. And they also, this is a fun fact. They didn't know that they were gay until they met in med school as roommates. Like they're literally, and they were roommates, like the meme.
This is my dream.
Yeah.
My dream is I will fall in love with the right woman. And then it will be like, we'll just have, yeah.
Loads you of need to meet them. They're
great,
like
kids and some cats.
That sounds so beautiful.
Yeah.
Now that's my dream. We can, I'm taking we
can,
your dream.
You can have that's my dream.
We can share the dream.
We can do the dream together.
We could. I mean, who knows?
Who knows? Comedy confession booth.
This might be it. This might be it. This might be the last. Like, this is the last confession booth. We're done now.
It's done.
We've solved it.
Is it a problem you've been trying to solve?
No.
This whole time? No. Okay.
Like every episode.
You ask people about their love life, hoping that you get in the
It's
love
not
life.
A bad idea to do that. But no, that's not typically.
That's not the plan.
That's not the plan yet.
Yet.
But anyway, my lesbian doctor friends, one of them was practicing for her, acupuncture test.
Yeah.
And getting her license in that. The other one already has her license in that. So I was like, oh, you want to practice on me? And then they just did electroacupuncture on me. And my back was like, the 3 days that I stayed there, despite sleeping on an air mattress, my back was in the best shape it's ever been in.
Yes. See, this is the dream.
It's the dream.
Yeah. Healthcare.
I know the only way to get free healthcare in the U.S. is have doctor friends.
Have a friend that does it. Yeah.
They also prescribe me drugs sometimes if I need.
Great.
That's the best.
Yeah. Everyone needs their system hack.
That's true. Do you have any hacks? Any hack advice?
I mean, no. We have the NHS theoretically. So.
Theoretically.
It's crumbling under the weight of all the cuts, budget cuts. But
And the government.
Yeah.
Rishi Sunak, great guy.
But we're having an election.
Are you?
Yeah, in 6 weeks.
Oh, nice. Who are the... I literally know nothing
about
it. It
was like
British
announced
politics.
Like 2 days ago. So I wouldn't expect you necessarily to know. But yeah,
amazing.
It's happening.
Do you know who you're going to vote for?
We don't have fixed terms.
Right.
So they can just call one anyway. And he just called a general election in 6 weeks. And then we're 6 weeks after they get called.
That makes sense. I've always wondered why there were so many random elections. Like in the UK, I was just like, when is your election day?
No, it's so random. I really was not predicting it for July. I was predicting it for September, October.
Yeah, but nicely, you'll be there.
Yeah, I'll be there.
So you can vote.
I can vote, sure.
Your vote matters.
Yeah. I don't know. I studied politics and I was a real big believer in democracy and was like, unless you vote, you shouldn't have a say so, blah, blah, blah. And at this present moment in time, in this clusterfuck of a world, I don't know if democracy will save us.
Really?
So I'm a little bit, what's the word when you're like?
Like skeptical?
Yeah. Like a little bit like, yeah.
How has that, like what changed your belief there?
I think just like studying more like post-colonial and like black feminist thinkers and stuff like that, just the realization that there's like a real way of like living with the world that isn't anything to do with like how European structures exist, and like democracy is a very European or like democracy as it's practiced in Europe is like a very certain thing. I mean, I would argue that like a lot of nations were like are inherently democratic.
Mm-hmm.
There was like, some go down a little rabbit hole, but there That's was like the first independence leader of Tanzania, Julius Nyerere, was like, it's not, democracy is not alien to us because we lived in the village where we all had to sit by the fire and gather and make conversations and decide what we agreed on and things like that. Like these practices that exist. And I think at this moment, democracy is kind of like a weird showmanship game.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just the way, it's just the times we live in. I just don't know right now what the choice in the UK is between Labour and the Conservatives. And I've historically always been a Labour voter and always would have been like, yes to the Labour Party. And like, no, right now I don't know if I can vote for the current leader of the Labour Party.
Mm, who is it?
Keir Starmer.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's.
It's hard for me. There's so many politics to keep up with. It's
It doesn't feel like it offers real radical change in the way. And like, I think after October, like not calling for a ceasefire and our opposition, who is the Labour Party, not calling for a ceasefire, is like, I don't know. Some people's line is like whether the NHS is funded or whether we renationalize the trains. But my line was genocide, and if you're not, then that's my line. And so I can't really move past that.
Yeah, it's tough because like America's facing something similar where
worse, I would say.
Worse, probably. For sure, where you have Biden who's actively funding Israel. But if you put Trump in office, he's actually even more allied with Israel.
Oh, sure.
Well, at least more allied with the current administration in Israel, yeah. which is Netanyahu, a far-right government. Yeah. And so it's like very, there's a lot of people that are like, I'm not going to vote for Biden because he's like
yeah.
pro-Israel. And I'm personally like, well, I'm Jewish, so I... My belief is like Israel has a right to exist.
Yeah.
As far as like the current conflict goes, I think that Netanyahu's not handling it well at all.
Yeah.
And it's like not going well and it's really yeah. bad and I hate what's happening. So it's even I'm like, no, Biden's like also not handling it well, but
right.
I don't want it to get worse and I don't want yeah. Trump to be in office.
Yeah.
So it's like very complicated.
Well, in the US, you're about to choose between two senile sexual predators.
Yeah.
Which is a real
It's really
bold,
fun.
bold choice. Do you know what I mean? And I think at that point, when there isn't really a choice, then democracy's not functioning in a way that it needs to function. And therefore, yeah. then, for me, it's just system overhaul.
But yeah. Like, it's not even fucking working.
Yeah.
And that's where I think... That's where I think Trump... I think that's why he won in the first place.
Yeah.
Because people were like, well, democracy's not working, and
yeah.
he's gonna... put a wrench in the current system.
Yeah.
But then he didn't. Then he just kind of made it worse.
For sure. And I think they think of him as like anti-establishment, except he is actually one of the most establishment people there is.
Yeah. I mean, he's just like part of all the like bribery and
yeah.
corruption and like the thing
people.
That makes it
yeah.
bad. And yeah. And I think even if you go to like the Israel-Palestine conflict,
yeah.
I like how political we're getting.
Yeah, it's with like, so much politics.
This passes the Bechdel test. Two girls talking politics. but it's like if you go to the conflict in Israel and Palestine, it's like a lot of innocent people are being thrown in the crossfire when
yeah,
really...
Yeah, but that's all conflicts. That's,
and that's
what conflicts do. Like, it's
yeah.
the people that suffer are the people
yeah.
who often just done nothing wrong.
Exactly.
Not that anyone who does something wrong should suffer either, I don't think, but...
yeah, I just
yeah,
think
it's
people
just a lot of
suffer.
Yeah, it's just like a lot of actors. Yeah, it's to me, it's capitalism. If
yeah.
war wasn't so profitable, we wouldn't
I agree.
Be funding all these wars.
I agree.
So I'm just saying, no more capitalism, basically.
I love that.
Yeah.
Let's go full communist.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not. I wouldn't actually describe myself as a communist. I'm more of a anarchist than a communist.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very.
Which Barcelona once was very briefly mm-hmm. during the civil war. There was 2 weeks of anarchism and communism.
It was great.
And no one tipped, and it was yeah. Have you read? I don't know. George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia.
No, I have it on my bookshelf. It's one of those that's like.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. It was the last artist war where all the artists showed up and fought on the side. Of,
oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I need to read it.
Yeah, it's really good. And I guess no one would do that now because weapons now means you just inherently die. So.
Yeah. Although apparently Jerry Seinfeld is in Israel. I don't know.
What? So, fighting for the idea?
No, I think he's like working with like families or something. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But some guy yelled at me at a comedy show yesterday because
what?
I brought up Jerry Seinfeld and he was like, Seinfeld sucks. And I was like, yeah, we'll get to it. Thinking that he meant, you know, Seinfeld dates underage women.
It's like, yeah, we'll get to the fact that he might be like a predator.
Yeah.
But like the other guy was like, no, first we have to deal with the war crimes
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, exactly. And so then he starts getting into Israeli politics with me as I just got off stage. And I'm like, I didn't bring up the politics.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm just making a joke about being Jewish. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And so it was a very weird moment where I was also like, that was weird, whatever. But then a bunch of comedians came up to me and were like, oh my God, are you okay? That guy was crazy. Like,
wow.
He shouldn't have talked to you about that. Like, that Ooh. Wasn't appropriate. And I was like, oh, should I be more mad that people
are... Oh, you
are...
were fine.
I was like, fine. And then I got more mad about it.
Okay.
Because it like didn't really click in me. I guess it's like when like talking about being Jewish and then someone brings up the conflict, it's like, or war or genocide, whatever we want to call it, it's like those two things don't have to be related.
No, they are like very much mutually exclusive.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So it's like, it's this at least the second time it's happened to me.
Yeah.
And one, the first time was way worse. So I was just like, oh, this is like, oh, it's okay. But it's like, I mean, that's going to happen. I guess I just kind of expect it now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've only... It, being black is such a weird... A specific kind of marginalization that in that I've always been black and I'm always recognized as black. And yeah. so people do stuff about that all the time to me as a black woman.
Like
but
what?
It's like used. I'm used to it.
Yeah.
Like very early on in comedy, I had... a guy that kind of came, it was so random. Oh, it's because I had made a comment about a guy that I dated who'd said to me in bed, which I just think is such a weird thing to say. He said, "You're the perfect shade," which is like full of like colorism and it's just creepy and weird. And I don't think it's, he was a German guy. I think it's like a normal thing to say to someone.
That is really weird to say.
And I went, "What am I going to say to you? Well, you look like gone off milk." Like, what? Like, I don't know. So it just feels like weirdly tokenizing maybe or like objectifying. I don't know. But
because I'm sure you deal with a lot of like.
Yeah. And I'd mentioned it on stage and one guy was like, why is that not this? Well, actually, some woman came up and she was like, "I want to know why that's not a compliment." She was a white woman. She was French.
It's always white. Know? The first person to me, it was a white British woman with blonde hair who was literally like. Like, and I made one small joke about being Jewish, and she was like, "You made me think about all the kids dying." And I was like, "By talking about being Jewish?" And she was like, "Yeah, it's just not a good time to talk about." I was like, "So when am I supposed to talk about being Jewish?" And she was like, "Well, it's just not a good time." That was her.
Who the hell was this?
Some British lady.
That's wild.
Yeah. But back to you, like, it's
that's
like,
insane.
It's that sort of, I mean, that's different, but it's also like, I'm sure you deal with stuff like that on a daily basis.
And yeah, so she'd been like, "Why is that not a compliment?" And then this other guy was like, "I want to hear this too." And then he like started, it was really odd. He started shouting at me.
That's
it was
so
like one
weird.
Of my like second or third ever gigs. So it was very,
and you kept at comedy after that.
Yeah, it was I was like, "What's happening?" And my friend Letty was like, "You don't need to answer this man's question." She was asking me a lot of questions about the relationship I had with my father, which was like very weird.
That's weird.
And that I didn't mention. Like,
were you
I
on stage
don't
or was
mention
this
my
after?
Father on stage until like recently, huh?
Were you on
this
stage?
This is after I've been on stage. And then he was like, "I'm dating this black woman and I love her. She's so exotic." And I was like, fucking
no.
hell. I hope she's free. Freedom and justice for that mystery woman.
Yeah. I hope she's out of there.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was really wild. So I don't know. It happens, but it happens like that is a quite an extreme example, but it happens quite a lot. And it happens from like all sides. Like I've had black men come up after me on stage and say quite horrible things about
oh my God.
Being me being a black woman and people not wanting to listen to me talk about my sex life or something like that. And like, so it just happens with a relative amount of ordinariness that I don't then I don't know what it must be like to then suddenly for it to switch and suddenly you're like not supposed to talk about an aspect of your identity that is intrinsic to your identity and actually also has nothing to do with that, but like also I can't turn off being black and I'm do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's like
of it, so it's a different,
it's like if you don't talk about it, it people are still aware of it, so you're like I'm gonna talk about it.
Oh. Or you could not talk about it, but people are going to still use it against you anyway. So
exactly.
It's kind of much of a muchness, I guess.
Exactly.
I don't know.
A much of a muchness. Very Lewis Carroll of you.
A much of a muchness.
I love it. Much of a muchness. I think a lot of Jews not conflate, but like will say that anti-Semitism and racism are the same. And I disagree. I think they're completely different. Or
they have really historically different contexts as well. Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a kind of racism, but it's also something deeper, or like not deeper, like the other one's not deep, but like there's something else to it, I think, that is maybe not.
I think they're different, right? Because I obviously am like white passing, I'm white. I am white. White passing sounds stupid. I'm white. Like I'm a white lady, but so it's like this weird thing where you benefit from that privilege, but at the same time, like have this other side of it that. I'm like, it's not to the same degree as racism, but sometimes like there are times when I won't talk about being Jewish on stage at all. And I'll come off and people will be like, "Oh, you're a Jew, right?" Like they just assume, which is fine. But like, it's also, so I'm like, you can be like, "I'm white," but then sometimes you're not. And then it's like a weird.
Yeah. And they marginalizations work differently in different contexts as well. So it really sort of depends on where you are and what you're doing, I think.
For sure.
Rather than like one being worse than the other, if that makes sense. I think we play this kind of like weird game of like who's got it worse.
Oh my God, the fucking
Oppression Olympics.
Oppression Olympics, that's it, baby. Have you watched Ginny and Georgia?
No.
Oh my God, you should watch Ginny and Georgia. It's so good. Well, so it's, do you know what it's about?
No, I have never
heard. So it's this like Netflix show. People have compared it a lot to Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
But it's basically about a young mom and her daughter. So the mom is like 30 and her daughter is like 16. So it's like she was like a teen mom. So they're really close, like as friends kind of too. And the daughter, Jenny, she's half black. So it's like this white single mom raising like a half black daughter. But it's like really funny, but also like really dramatic. There's like some murder mystery elements to it. But at the same time, it's also just like teen drama meets like the mom drama is so relatable because we're like 30. So I also relate to her life in a way. And it's. Anyway, there's a whole scene about Oppression Olympics where Ginny is dating a guy who's Asian.
Yeah.
And they kind of like go back and forth and it turns into this like Oppression Olympics thing. And she's like, I don't want to deal with that. Like, this is like kind of fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when I first heard the term and was just like, this is, people do that all the fucking time.
For sure. And it's kind of to do with the structures of how we live our lives and that everything's on like these weird kind of gradients.
Yeah.
In like European capitalist thinking.
Yeah, it all comes back to the European capitalism, which is so fun. But back to you.
We really segued down a...
Yeah, we went down quite a rabbit hole.
A rabbit hole of politics.
We did. But I want to know, so you started comedy in Berlin.
Yeah.
And what led you to go to Berlin in the first place?
London got really expensive.
Oh, yeah. Great. Love that. That's like people ask me the same thing. They're like, why are you in Barcelona? And like, have you seen rent prices in New York City?
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah, London was really expensive. I worked a job where I was working. I sold beer to pubs, which is not a bad job. I was drunk a lot of the time.
Yeah. Because you walk in, I used to be a bartender, so I would work with the...
Yeah. And then they all recognize you. They're like, stay for a pint. I was always like drunk by 4:30, like couldn't see, meet a friend for dinner. London's a big drinking after work city.
Yeah.
It was like that. Energy and I wasn't happy and I couldn't figure it out, and so I just really randomly on a whim went to Berlin.
Nice.
And then I was like there for like 4 years and it was
cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. And you, so what led you to start comedy?
I was trying to spite someone. I was actually trying to spite the man who said you're like the perfect shade.
Wow.
Yeah, I was trying to spite this man I'd flown to Nepal for him.
Wow.
We were dating when I lived in India. I lived in India for about just under a year. We were dating and I thought we were in love. I think we both thought that, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, we were on the phone to each other for about 6 months on like Skype.
Wow. And it sounds like in hindsight, you don't think it was love.
No, I think it was like deep infatuation. I don't know.
What is
we
love?
Got on really well. I still kind of to this day don't quite understand what happened, but like, I got to Nepal and basically he turned out to be like a fucking asshole. And then
so
I was stuck in Kathmandu and didn't really have very much money. So I couldn't change my flight. I think I didn't want to ask my mother for money. I didn't want to admit to her that it had gone really badly.
Yeah.
I used the last of my money at some point to get a flight to India because I had friends in India and was in India for 2 weeks and then waited until I could leave. And it was like such a weird experience of being like this man just not being very nice to me and kind of abandoning me, but also saying really horrible things about me to my face. And I thought, well, if you can say all these horrible things about me to my face, then like what could a room of strangers possibly do?
That's so true. Like, they can't hurt me.
They can't hurt me. Not the way that... Because I thought I was going to love him most in the world. And they didn't. Yeah.
That's a tough experience to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I got back to Berlin and I was 29 and I was like, I'd really enjoyed my like 20s in like lots of ways. It was also complicated in lots of ways as 20s are. But like, I really enjoyed like my life that was like, you know, I have really good friends in Berlin. I work kind of odd jobs. Like, I was really living to just live, you know.
Yeah.
Worked in a call center, did, like, all these random things. But I was like, I think you need something more. You need, like, a pull, like a life pull where you're like, this is my thing. Like, I am a writer. I'm a this. I'm a... Mm-hmm. And I think you need that. or I felt like I needed that because otherwise I was going to end up on the whims of these men. Like, men would come into my life and it'd be like, yeah, come to Nepal. And right. then, like, had it gone well, I'd be some fucking foreign aid worker's fucking wife.
Right.
In Kathmandu. Like, that would have been my life, like going to like stupid like expat parties, which like crazy. My least favorite thing.
Yeah, probably. It's just a ton of small talk with
People who think they're like saving the world but are actually like fucking just doing colonialism.
Yeah.
So I was like really like, yeah, I was like, oh wow, like you are kind of on the behest of these winds of like other people's whims of like go and be here. And I was like this needs to not happen again. Like, you cannot end up just somewhere because you don't have any direction in life. It's like, yeah. There was that bit in White Lotus, you know, where Jennifer Coolidge says to like her assistant, and she's like, Portia, you've got to sort your shit out, otherwise if you don't, like, you're gonna end up like just doing other people. There's a quote, that's like, you got to get your shit together.
Which is so funny coming from her.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole point. Is that she's that's what happened to her.
Yeah.
But she's like rich.
Yeah, but she's really rich. So it's fine. So it's like, you got to... God, that show is so good.
I'm so excited for season 3.
It's so good. Yeah, it's that thing of like, you need to have something that anchors you. So then I was like, okay, yeah. I've got to like figure out my thing. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get into politics, and then I think between Brexit and Boris Johnson getting elected, I was like, well, no one's going to elect me in the UK, so all my politics. And it was almost a realization.
It's a sad thing to think, but it's also like, that is kind of realistic.
Yeah, and you can't change the system from inside. I think there maybe was a time, but the system is a certain system now. So it was just like a realization my politics were too radical. I did at varying points apply to work with the Labour Party and like never hard back, which is also like an interesting thing that was just like, I kind of went where the universe took me, in the sense of like, one of the things I tried was comedy. Yeah. And it was a thing that worked pretty easily from the get-go.
That's nice.
And yeah, I think it was, there was a comedy competition in Berlin called the Berlin New Stand-Up Awards. It was the first year they did it, and I entered it. I think the heat was like my 17th ever gig.
Oh my God.
And then the final was like my 45th gig.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I like when people count their gigs.
Yeah. I used to count mine for ages. And then at some point, I used to write them down on like old envelopes.
That's so cute.
And I have like some old envelopes somewhere with all of them written down. And then now they're all in my online calendar because it's work. So
yeah.
I'm like, if I needed to count them, I can. But.
Yeah. It never dawned on me to count. And by the time people, only recently, I think when I started going to the UK.
They ask. Specifically ask, like, how many gigs have you done?
Yeah. I always just click, like, the most because I'm just like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I've been doing it for a while.
And it also, like, really doesn't reflect how good you are as a comedian. But I guess what they're looking for is, like, your comfortability on stage. But I also think that's, like, really dependent on who you are. Like, like you said you had, like, a theater background, like, you're gonna be comfortable on stage in a way that, like, I didn't come from any performing arts or anything. Like, it took me a long time to get past that stage fright.
Did you do any sort of like public speaking or writing or anything before?
No, I would have said like I wrote a bit, but nothing funny. Comedy was a real, like, no one saw it coming. I was never like the fun kid or like the funniest kid or whatever. People in like Berlin, and especially one of my American friends, she was always like, you're so funny. And I was like, I'm not funny, I'm just British. And it was a real realization that, like, British people are, like, inherently quite naturally funny.
They're very funny, and they're very, because the British sense of humor is so dry.
So dry, yeah.
And, like, you can just kind of say something off the cuff, and it's the funniest
but
thing.
I'm not being funny, like, I was just being a bitch, if I'm honest. Like, it used to happen in India, because I would make comments, and I'd be like, well, that's... And people would laugh, and I was like... Like, I don't know, that's the sort of comments me and my friends make all the time. Like, I'm not the funniest of my friends. Like, I have a lot more friends that are, like, much funnier than me. But they would never go on stage. That's not something they're interested in doing.
So. Right. Which I think is, I was never the funny friend either.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was the weird friend. Like, ooh. I was, like, the weird, sometimes kind of annoying one.
I love it.
Yeah. So it was like, you don't really know what's going to get you on stage for comedy. Like, it's always, I feel like it's kind of, like, a ragtag group of, like, weirdos and outcasts and, like, but sometimes you're just, like, the normal one and you're like, I just got some thoughts that I'm gonna
Yeah. I think I was just, like, looking for something that would, like, my confidence at that point, my self-confidence had been, like, tanked into the ground by this guy.
Yeah.
I had a lot of, like, I was having quite weird reactions, especially around men, afterwards. And yeah, I just was a bit of a shell of a human being. And it was just quite a good way of like getting that confidence back.
Yeah.
And building it up. And then in hindsight, I think, well, like it's still like external validation. But there's also like a time in your life where you like do the spiritual thing where you're like, oh, I'll just like meditate and find my self-worth inside. But like there's also a time where like we live in really externally validated societies. It's really hard to move away from that, I think.
I agree. Like people, I think it's really hard when you go to therapy or you talk to friends and they're like, you just have to love yourself. And it's like, our society doesn't actually value that. Our society places emphasis on getting married and having kids and loving the people around you. Yeah. And like, if you're...
Especially for women and femmes, I think it wants a lot of like labor that comes out of like a kind of generosity of heart.
Yeah. Like that's what makes you a good person, is if you're like generous and care about other people.
And you're a bit like self-sacrificing in a way.
Exactly.
But then now I think there's a whole industry that's built around the logic of like self-care, which is interesting. But it's like as soon as capitalism can figure out a way of selling it to you, then don't worry, we're good with it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's like it's so fucking... Like every ad is like... It's your day. Think about being in the bath. Get this.
Bubble bath for self-care or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's funny because self-care was a real thing that was created originally by like a lot of black US movements that was like, but the whole logic was like self-care so that you have the resilience to like defend yourself against the cops. It was like, so you have resilience against the rest of society. Like you can't also be taking yourself down because society's going to do all that. And that was like the original self-care movement. It's like get a manicure, but like, so you can scratch the eyes out of cops, not like get a manicure because like self-care.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's funny now. And it's like, obviously like such a trend and blah, blah, blah. And actually like, I think a lot of movements now and activist movements are like talk a lot about community and are like, we need to like start really trusting each other, because until we trust each other we can't build like a better society.
That's really interesting though that it comes from that sort of like place of like you have to be selfish so that you can give to others.
Yeah. And like just so that you have like energy for the resistance kind of vibe.
Yeah, energy for the resistance.
We all need energy for the resistance, it's which I true. Think everyone, a lot of people need in this time, because a lot of people, it's like a hard, I'm watching a lot of my friends burn out at this moment in time.
It's really hard.
Trying to do like a lot of activism. And I just feel like everyone needs to like find as much like fucking happiness and joy as they possibly can. Because like I think we're in it for like a bit of a long haul.
Yeah.
And we need like loads of community and we need lots of fun and we need to be resourced, and people are... Capitalism will like really happily take all of your labor and burn you out really easily. So I think
really
do everything you can to not let that happen.
I love it. Great advice. Don't let capitalism take you down.
Don't let capitalism beat you down. If you can help it. Like I know we all have to work, but like there's such a, like a celebration of the grind, and I've been really, and it's not that I don't work really hard, because I do work really hard at comedy, and I don't have a personal life partly because of comedy, but I think
for sure
I also try and do it in a way that is resourcing for me, and like one of that is to not be in the UK too often, and certainly not to be in the UK or Northern Europe during winter, because such bad seasonal depression.
Nightmare. Same.
So
it's
I'm
so
just
bad.
Like,
come here.
No. I'll come here. Yeah, I'm happy to. That's why I went to New Orleans. I was like, I literally missed my, you know, I usually spend like February, like January and February trying not to kill myself. And this year I was like, didn't.
Oh my God.
It was so great for me.
Congrats.
Just because there was sun. Oh
it's
my God.
Amazing.
It's almost like my body is designed to live somewhere warm. That's so crazy.
Oh my God. That's crazy to think about too, though, because like I get really bad seasonal depression, and I'm like, even here though, it's like still not great because it's like the sun, it's just less sun than normal, and like it's colder than normal, and then all of a sudden April hits, and I'm like, wow, life is great.
Yeah, then you're like, it's fine, everything's fine. It's so ridiculous how much we're just like essentially just like walking plants, like humans are just like walking around jumbo plants.
I'm picturing us as like. Plants.
Yeah, like we're just like big plants, and we just want like water and like nice soil and like be in the sun. Like that's just our deal.
That sounds beautiful.
And like it's so simple, actually. Like humans are very, very simple and want like just really like food, water, nice sun, maybe like a nice baby. And also like we had that and then like colonialism happened and then they were like, no, everyone work. And it's just the stupidest thing ever.
I agree. Do you have a day job?
No.
Nice.
Yeah,
just living off comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I wasn't for a while. I was very fortunate in getting a kind of early inheritance, which was the kind of money that in Berlin, I was like, great, I'm not going to need a job for the next like 6 years. And I moved to London and was like, oh, I'm not going to need a job for the next 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
But now comedy is like paying. But it's the way I do comedy. Like, yes, it's enough to live off, but I'm not paying rent right now. Like, right. I think I should, like, I always really want to try and caveat like a financial situation where like I live really frugally in a way that most people don't. Yeah. And people can't understand it because I'm traveling all the time, but I'm staying for free in Barcelona. I stayed for free in Lisbon. I stayed for free in Paris. I have literally friends in cities all over the world, which is like just a result of having traveled a lot. And I stay for free in lots of places. I got an art residency in New Orleans that was paid. I stayed for free there.
Right.
I stayed for free in Tanzania. So I just, I'm constantly on the move. And like then staying with people. And I'm also like everyone's favorite cat sitter. So I cat sit a lot of cats.
Nice.
And I just do that. And I'm not. And so therefore my outgoings, once you take rent out of the equation, flights in Europe and flights just generally, I'm very good at finding very cheap flights.
Nice. What do you use to find flights?
A mixture of Google Flights and there's one called Momondo.
Oh, okay. I've seen that one. Yeah.
And I'm just like very good at like figuring out routes. So I managed to like fly into the States last time for like 460 return to New Orleans from the UK, which is really good.
That's really good.
And then I found, and then I didn't want to fly back into the London, and I found this really cheap flight for 220 from London to Frankfurt, and then took the Flix train from Frankfurt to Berlin. Like I'm very good at like doing all those things because I was poor for a really long time in life and didn't have any money. So I'm like very good at not spending money. I don't buy stuff and I don't furnish anything because I have no house to furnish or house to put stuff in.
Yeah, so it's like, so I'm not buying art or like
my whole outgoings, I don't buy clothes. My whole outgoings are literally just my travels and flights and travel and food and drink.
Yeah, I was gonna say you need food.
Yeah, and that's how I live the life I live. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to a lot of people. I understand that a lot of people need to feel grounded and need to be like, this is where I live and this is my home and this is my community. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm gonna burn out from this life quite soon. I would say maybe I have one more year left in me.
Yeah, but it's very bohemian of you.
But right now, that's what we're doing.
That's cool. Until that's really admirable.
Hopefully comedy will start paying something that like means I could have the kind of life I would like to have. But that in London is hard because actually everyone is paying like fucking £900 a month for like a box room. So
it's insane. It's insane in London. Yeah. I know that. So who I like to just round it out with a few like questions. Like one of my favorite things to ask is like who your favorite comedians are, whether that's like famous people or just like friends or locals that you're like want to shout out.
Ooh. Locals to here or just locals to anywhere?
Anywhere.
Oh.
I mean, you can say locals to here.
This is such a hard question. Thank you.
I came up with it myself.
No, not like it's hard. Like there's just so many. Do you know what I mean? Like if people ask me. The other thing on the other hand is I don't watch a lot of stand-up.
Yeah. Oh, same, to be honest.
Like I watch stand-up if I'm doing it, but on the whole, I tend to not to watch a lot of stand-up because I see a lot of stand-up and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah,
so people are always like, what's your favorite comedian? I'm like, ugh, what a horrible art form. can't think of anything worse than watching stand-up. But then at the same time, I have like obviously a lot of comedians that I like deeply adore and think are just like so funny. Michelle DeSwart in the UK.
Okay.
She's super funny. Catherine Ryan was like kind of one of the ones I was like a fan of since I was like 14, you know.
Cute.
I'm like trying to think like who's, there's so many people. I've got like, there's so many. Kima Bob, Sakisa, I love. Kyra Gray. Who else? Just, there's so many. And it's hard to, Olga.
Yeah.
Who I just saw was because we were in Lisbon together. Lisbon. Yeah. There's so many because it's just, it's a hard one. It's not hard, but it's just there's so many.
Yeah, which is fine. You don't have to say every single one.
Yeah.
There's no pressure to list every person that
everyone
whose comedy you've ever loved.
I love loads of people's comedy.
Yeah. It's
Sam
more like,
J.
Oh, I love him. Yeah.
I love Sam J. And then there was someone recently who I'd like just found.
I love finding like new people.
Yeah.
And like when a clip comes up, like that's the thing is like, it does work. Like I'm oh, a clip comes up and I'm like, oh my God, they are so funny. I'm going to follow them. But yeah, it's a tough question on purpose.
Yeah. I feel like when Edinburgh comes, and fingers crossed if I'm there, I will definitely do like, you do, you know, your Edinburgh recommendations. And Edinburgh is so good for that because then you see so much comedy and then you can just go straight off
so
being like
much.
this person.
Yeah.
But I'm not a comedy nerd. I'm not someone who's like, just like loves the, adores the art form of comedy. I just don't think it's that big a deal in the end.
Interesting. But it's what you want to do.
Yeah, because everyone has to have a job under capitalism. I don't want to do anything. Like, I think if I haven't made that abruptly clear, like, I don't want a job. I can't think of anything worse than having a job. Like, I want to lie down on a beach with my tits out, drinking
that
coconut
amazing.
Every single, like, day of my life, and then, like, having great sex and, like, eating food and, like, living in a little tribal community where we just, like, spend our days at the beach doing this and, like, maybe doing some fishing. And then every now and then someone makes, like, a clay pot or we, like, paint some artwork on our cave or our tent or whatever we live in.
That sounds
like,
so
that's
nice.
That's my dream. And that's, like, literally how humans are supposed to be. We all have to have a job under capitalism.
Yeah. Which is like you need to have money to survive.
Idea that was, but
it's
yeah,
stupid.
You have to have money to survive, which is the stupidest thing in the world. Like the concept of the phrase cost of living, which we're like constantly banding around the UK now, like a cost of living crisis. The living should not be a cost. Like living is just living. Everyone, I believe this inherently, that every single person that's born on this planet is entitled to life and a good life. And yeah, so I don't want a job. And like when I was living in Berlin, it was still the time when the rents were cheap enough that I could work 20 hours a week at a call center and I made 650 euros a month.
Yeah.
And my rent was 300 euros a month. And that 350 euros was enough for me to go out for dinner any single time I wanted, because it's when you can still get like a good dinner for 10 euros in Berlin.
Yeah.
And I could drink at all the pubs I wanted because every beer was like less than 3 euros.
Crazy.
And like I lived my best fucking
life.
And
this was just like 5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bit longer than 5 years ago. It was about... When did I move to Berlin? 2016.
Okay.
Yeah, so 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was so good. And I lived my best life. I had amazing friends. We had a really great time. We all worked either part-time or freelance. Everyone was free in the day. We lived in each other's houses in a way that, like, it's quite student-y, but I really enjoyed, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I was still 29. And if I was, like, in the area of a friend's house and I wanted a nap, I'd call them up and be like, can I come around and nap in your bed?
Fine. The best.
And then someone would make you dinner. We just lived a real... There was a real moment of, like... I felt like of like a bit of kind of a bohemia that I really loved. That I would still live like that had capitalism not changed the circumstances and made it so that a part-time job doesn't fund rent anymore.
No, it does not.
And I mean, there are other factors as well. Everything's like a complicated, multifaceted decision. But I don't want a job.
I agree. I want
to live tits out eating berries. And if I can't live in the woods with my tits out eating berries because I've now... been socially conditioned so that I can't survive under those conditions, then I thought, you know what, as jobs go, this isn't a bad one.
Yeah.
And I also think, okay, sorry, now I'm getting really into it.
I love it.
You're like, I've just got a few rounding off questions. And I'm like, I have a lot of thoughts.
I like your thoughts. Keep it going. Let's go.
Like people are like, oh, well, you couldn't do comedy in the woods. This is one of the oldest jobs, I believe, that society, like humans have ever done. Mm-hmm. Because I would have been the person, I would not have been a hunter. I would have not have been a gatherer in the tribe. I would have been the person that told stories around the fire. Funny stories, maybe sometimes sad stories, but interesting stories. And people would have been like, we love her stories. That's why we give her the food.
Yeah.
That would have been like, it's an original job. And now I have to whore myself out from audiences around the world for money so that I can have a nice life. But
exactly.
I'm not inherently wedded to the concept of a job. What was your question again?
I was like, do you have a day job? Just as
a day job.
But it was like...
And then I was like, I have lots of thoughts on jobs.
We don't want a day job or a night job,
I
really.
I don't even want a day... Like, I'm... It's jobs go. It's not a bad job. I'm not mad at comedy. I love like I said, I'm loving working on the show. I love doing, I hate the other stuff around it.
Yeah, the promo and the management and the
Yeah, because that's not what I want to do. I just want to tell people some funny stories, and I really love them laughing, and I obviously get validation for it, and that's a deep psychologically rooted thing within me, and I get that. But I also like enjoy watching people be happy, and that's really nice, and that's, I'm lucky to be able to do it. Yeah. But I'm only in as fortunate as the circumstances allow that fortune. I know that there's loads of people. The saddest thing in the world to me is that so many people are like, will be born and will live and die in the fields, who could have done this and have interesting, thoughtful, wonderful, beautiful things to say about the world, and will never have the opportunity to say them. I don't think that's a decent system.
I agree. I think, yeah, there's so many people who haven't even considered that. Like, I think in America especially, like, just because that's where I come from, like, there's, capitalism was such a focus. Like, when I first, because I moved here first in 2016 and then had to go back to the States, and immediately it's just like people are obsessed with the grind there.
Oh, for sure.
Like, love it. Yeah. To such a degree that the American dream is working. And like,
it's that quote, it's a James Baldwin quote, isn't it? Which is like, it's like, what's your dream job? And it's like, honey, I don't dream of labor.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck dreams so of work? Weird. Like, that's I don't know. I'm always like worried about these people. I'm like, have you had sex? Like, because it's so much better than work. Like, and it's also, it can also be work. Sex work is work. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
True.
Like, but like, have you, like, I
like,
don't
have
know
you
if you like laid
pleasure?
In a, yeah, like, I'm just like confused, but, and I feel like people aren't good at like having a good time, and I'm like, is this like a white people thing? Did you decide it because you don't, guys don't like having fun? Like, what's going on? Who decided this world? This is so stupid. Like, I literally just want to like lie around and like kind of have sex, and then like occasionally like eat some delicious food.
That's beautiful.
I don't want to crawl out of my like, no. Like, I don't want a job.
No, we should
have
to.
But I do
to.
It because I have to.
Yeah, because it's the only way to survive in this world, and it's stupid. It's stupid.
And but on that, on the other side, I'm incredibly fortunate. I found something that I like to do, and I seem to be quite good at it.
Yeah, which is nice. That is a good luxury. That's like, you know, like most people can't do that, and that's tough. But
and that's really hard.
What's kind of funny about it, maybe I'm making a connection that is just because I've been obsessed with it, but do you know the TV show Survivor?
Yeah,
like the reality show. We just aired the finale, we, as if I'm part of it.
My production company.
I write about it a lot for work. But the work, like work, and the finale just aired, and it's really interesting what you were saying about not being a hunter or gatherer and just telling stories around the fire.
Yeah.
Because the woman who ended up winning was not as strategic as one of the final three people, but she was so social, and basically her entire game was just being there for people socially.
Yeah.
But then at the end they asked, okay, what are you going to use the money for? And she was like, I have given to people my entire life. My whole life has just been about being generous. I don't make any money off my business. It's all about employing people, and I make basically nothing. Yeah. And I'm going to use the money for myself. And that won people over, because it's like self-care. And so it all kind of came together in my mind where I was like, Survivor is life. Like,
yeah. No, but that's, it's social, like, people who do good social lubricant, I don't really.
Yeah.
It's like, it's invaluable for society. And societies, capitalist societies, have profited for years of the unpaid, unacknowledged, like, labor of traditionally women, like, traditionally femmes and women, who've done this for each other. And the survival of marginalized communities, queer communities, communities in color, rely on an incredible amount of social labor that people are doing for free for each other.
Exactly.
And that's how they survive it. And, yeah, the US is so capitalistic, and people so buy into the grind. And it's so hard to explain to people, especially there, that, like, it doesn't have to be this.
Yeah.
Way. Like, I think Europe is much more, especially continental Europe, like UK less so, but is so much more open to the concept of socialism just because we historically have had so much of it.
Well, and it's like, I think in Barcelona is a good example of, like, you have your siesta 2 hours a day, like, you drink wine at lunch, like, it is very much a culture of, like, you
Let's
shouldn't have,
a night.
Have to work.
Yeah, that you shouldn't have to work all the time, and we also need to have, like, the good life. Like, I think it's, I don't know what my next thought was going to be, but, like, I think Also, because Barcelona is Catalonia, so I think they've also got that kind of like social. We like to be different and socialist and not Spain.
And have a culture.
Yeah, yeah, and have our own culture.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think just revolution's coming. No borders, no nations, no jobs.
Love it.
Everyone back to the woods, tits out, eating berries. If you want to tell funny stories in the woods, great. We'll love to have you.
Love it. And we'll be there with a bear instead of a man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a recent thing, wasn't
that's
it?
That's a recent thing.
Like the women
be alone
with a bear or with a man, and all the women were like, a bear.
A bear.
Which is like, obviously, yes, I would rather be with a bear.
Well, they're so much more predictable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you just, like, I don't know, just like, chill out, you know? Okay, the last question.
Okay.
What would be your advice? This is gonna be. I feel like this is interesting from you. What would be your advice to like a new or up and coming comedian? Coming off of, I don't want to fucking work.
I don't want to. Nobody wants to work anymore. Kim was talking about me. Yes, Kim. I don't want to work. Also, you should stop. We don't want to see you anymore.
No, we're done.
What's my advice for an upcoming comedian? It depends what they want from it. I've said this and actually not really got any takers, but I was like, if there are any queer or female or trans or women or non-binary people of colour who are coming up in comedy and they think in some way that I can help them, then like get in my DMs. Because it's a wild how many male comedians feel very comfortable taking either advice from mm-hmm. you or... that think that you will help them out in some way how little that like I think marginalized genders don't put themselves forward. So I've been like very like, if you think I can help you, I'm not saying I can, I don't have an in the industry particularly, but if you think I can help you, then like please get in these DMs and I will do my best. I think the trick is like, it's the obvious stuff, which is like, you grow on stage. Mm-hmm. Stage time is invaluable. Do as many spots as you can. Don't mm-hmm. burn yourself out. Try not to take yourself or what anyone else says too seriously. Like, you know you. Like, don't listen to the bad stuff mm-hmm. that people write about you or say about you. But also at the same time, take the good stuff with a real grain of salt. Like a real pinch of salt. Because I think it can go to your head when you get like... people very early on said really nice complimentary things, which I'm really, really grateful for, about like, you are like a, you know, people said like, oh, you're a natural, like people, like I've had like only kind of two reviews now, but like they've been both very complimentary. Mm-hmm. But it's like, try not to let that stuff get to your head as well. Like, just try not to like let too much outside stuff get in, which is like a much easier said than done.
That's great advice though.
Stay really true to yourself, which is again really hard, and it's really hard for people, especially marginalized people, because I think we're always trying to like moderate society around us, like mm-hmm. like ourselves to fit into society around us. But like more and more I'm like coming to my true voice. Everyone will say like, this is the way you do it. There will always be some man at some point that's like, comedy is suffering, and if you're not hard enough to hurt this industry, you can go and fuck yourself and die in a ditch. And you're like, no.
Yeah.
I reject that completely. Comedy does not have to be like that. You will find your spaces. You will find your people. If that means, like, the world is vast, and I think we get really stuck in, like, the scenes and the nation states that we're in. The world is vast. If you don't resonate with audiences in London, you might resonate with audiences in Berlin. My comedy is very Berlin style, I would say, because I started there. And it fits the crowd that is Berlin, which is, like, kind of young.
Mm-hmm.
People who feel similarly to me about the world being fucked. So yeah, it's like that stuff, which I think is like the kind of advice that people kind of give in general, which is like, stay true to yourself. Stage time is invaluable. What else would I say? I didn't read a book or like watch a YouTube video or Google how to do stand up, and I've never done those things. And at some point someone was like, oh, that's so funny that you can do this and you've never read a book. And then they lent me two books and I never read them because I was like, I don't want to read a book. And I think, I don't know, I'm an incredibly absorbent person and I take people's advice quite literally somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, I think, good for me that I never did that, because I think I have a style that's quite unique.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think that's great. Honestly, like, it's been a topic of conversation in our scene about, there's been a book everyone's been talking about.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what it's called. It's not Comedy Bible. It's a different one.
Yeah.
But, and one of my friends was like, I don't want to I'm done reading comedy books. Like, I think they kind of have taken me away from the original thing.
I think you have your unique voice, and like people will try and change it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, like, yeah, there's a billion mediocre men out there who could learn to read a book and maybe like be a better comedian. But maybe you shouldn't just be a comedian.
Yeah,
it's really odd. It's a weird job because everyone feels like you can learn it. I'm about to say something that's going to make me sound like such a fucking
No, dick. Say it.
Someone recently like was in my Facebook DMs being like, this comedy course is going to happen and it's £400. £400, like, I could spend £400 now. I grew up without very much money. Yeah. £400 will always be a lot of money to me.
It is a lot of money.
For a long time. No shade on anyone that's done this. If this like helped you, great. I'm probably like going to eat my words in like a year's time. I'm going to be like signing up to this comedy course. Like, this is the most helpful comedy course ever. If I have to pay £400 to be a comedian,
yeah,
then I'm not good at the job. I don't understand wanting to do a job that doesn't come naturally to you. I want to live in this world with the least amount of work I can put in. If comedy is coming naturally to me and it doesn't seem to be like the actual comedy itself doesn't seem to be hard for me, like,
yeah,
per se. Sometimes I have like writer's block around it, that's natural, but like it doesn't seem to be that difficult for me to do. If it's that difficult for you to do, why the fuck are you doing it? Find something that's easier to do. Like, we've all got this much time on the earth.
Just do something that's like low effort and enjoy your time.
And someone was like, you can pay for it, this person, £400 to do a joke writing course. I was like, absolutely fucking not. Like, what's this person making off everyone? What? There's like 20 people in it, and they're making.
And what are they? What? It's always teachers. Also, like, who are the teachers teaching them? Probably. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, what's my maths?
I don't know. Let's see. 400 times what? 20 people.
That's $8,000.
$8,000. There you go.
That's too much money. No one needs it. Well, that, I think actually you do need.
But like, does that person? What are they? It's very rarely someone you've heard of teaching the course. So I'm like, what? What do you know about comedy? Like, maybe you're a working comedian, but like,
yeah,
and not all great comedians are famous.
There's a real kind of thing of like everything can be taught, everything can be learned. There's a real thing of that in the current mode of capitalism. And I do just think some things come a bit more naturally to other people. Like, I don't think it means that it can't be taught. And if you're like, this is my dream and this is what I want to do and I'm going to learn it and I'm going to figure it out, then fine. That's your choice to spend your life doing that. That's on you, I guess. Like, I'm not going to be mad at you. I actually just don't care what you do. I don't actually care what anyone does. Yeah, just do whatever you want with your life. But for me, that would be such a waste of my joy in life comes from like a lot of traveling, a lot of talking to different people, eating good food, like just having as like much joy and fun as possible. And if I'm taking away from that joy and fun because I'm in some fucking basement alone somewhere.
Yeah.
Or like doing a comedy course somewhere, every Saturday I lose my Saturday because I'm doing this comedy, like that wouldn't be interesting or fun to me.
No.
And it wouldn't be worth it to me.
Yeah.
But that's because of how I move the world and how I want to enjoy life. So I feel like if you like doing comedy, you feel like this is the thing you want to do, like just do it. It's like, it's really the Nike.
I know British people
and
say it
actually,
wrong.
Actually, it is Nike.
It is Nike.
That's how you say the goddess. It was a Greek goddess, right? Yeah, it was actually do pronounce it Nike, but we're like Nike. But it's just do it. It really is. And it's like, don't overthink it. And I just think that's actually the best advice you can get from it. It's like, don't overthink it too much. Don't decide even if you like it or not. Don't worry about it. Just do it. And do it for as long as it works. And then when you don't feel like you don't want to do it anymore, don't do it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's perfect.
Cool. It took me a while, but I got some good advice.
I think you had fantastic advice. Maybe the best advice I've ever heard on the show.
Oh my God. I love that. Yeah. I love validation.
Oh my God. I'm here to validate you.
Thank you.
Anytime.
I love that. I can't wait for our exciting lesbian relationship. Same. That's coming.
It's going to be great. It's lesbian doctors. Let's go.
Doctors.
We're going to be doctors.
We have to become doctors as well.
Yeah, we have to meet.
Oh, okay, cool. Great. I'm kidding. Well, This is my announcement that I'm leaving. Quitting comedy and going to medic school. Can't even say it. Doctor school. That's not a thing.
Doctor school. You're going to be great at it. Okay, well, thank you so much, Kate. This was really fun. Can't wait to make out later. It's going to be great.
Yeah, tapas.
Tapas. Anyway, bye, Ethan.
Bye. Thank you.
That was really fun.
Thank you. That was really mad.